Stay beautiful, Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. The United States and Russia are pointing fingers at each other over the now abandoned Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, signed by U.S. President Ronald Reagan and Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev in 1987. It was seen as a major Cold War achievement. On his way to Australia today for his first official trip since being confirmed last month, U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper was asked if the end of INF could lead to a new arms race.
Russia has been racing, if anybody, to develop these systems in violation of the treaty, not us. And, you know, the traditional sense of an arms race has been in a nuclear context. Right now, we don't have plans to build nuclear-tipped INF range weapons. It's the Russians who have developed non-compliant, likely, possibly nuclear-tipped weapons. So I don't see an arms race happening. I do see us taking proactive measures to develop a capability that we need for both the European theater and certainly this theater, the Indo-PACOM theater.
Esper also raised the possibility the United States could decide to deploy conventional intermediate-range missiles in Asia, though he would not say where or when. U.S. President Donald Trump's pick for the next director of national intelligence has withdrawn his nomination. Republican Congressman John Ratcliffe of Texas bowed to mounting questions about his qualifications and experience. The president blamed the news media for the decision, telling reporters Ratcliffe was treated unfairly and that the confirmation process would have been a long, hard slog. The move comes just 5 days after the president surprised many in Washington by choosing Ratcliffe, a Trump loyalist and the most junior member of the House Intelligence Committee. Mr. Trump said he could announce a new nominee shortly to succeed Dan Coats, who resigned last week. He said he would review three candidates this weekend. More news at voanews.com. From Washington, this is VOA News. Tens of thousands of pro-democracy demonstrators were back in the streets of Hong Kong today in another weekend show of defiance. There have been clashes with Hong Kong police who use tear gas. Some protesters, like Nathan Leung, are calling for escalating the confrontation with the city's Beijing-backed government with strikes.
We have been fighting for democracy for over 2 months. So it is now is a very key element that we need to stress that strike is a very powerful tool to win democracy.
At one point today, the protesters removed a Chinese national flag from its pole and threw it into Victoria Harbor. Thousands of South Koreans have marched in Seoul to express their anger at Japan's decision to downgrade South Korea's trade status, key to an escalating diplomatic feud. AP correspondent Sarah Bassett has our report.
An estimated 15,000 people swarmed the streets in front of the Japanese embassy, carrying signs that read Boycott Japan and No Abe, referring to Japan's prime minister. The crowds marched to a nearby boulevard for a candlelit vigil, where speakers called for the government to discard a deal between the countries over compensating South Korean women who were forced to work in Japan's World War II military brothels. South Korea says the Japanese trade curbs could hurt its export-dependent economy and has accused Japan of weaponizing trade to retaliate over bilateral disputes stemming from their bitter wartime history. South Korea's foreign minister says the United States has many concerns over the row and is offering to help its allies find an end to their dispute. I'm Sarah Bassett.
The United States and the Taliban are holding an eighth round of peace talks today in Qatar. Officials say it is the most crucial stage of the negotiations designed to bring an end to the 18-year war in Afghanistan. Earlier this week, Sohail Shaheen, who speaks for the Taliban, told VOA the two sides are closing in on a draft text. He said, quote, "We've addressed all major issues." Meanwhile, the United Nations reports there was a sharp rise in civilian casualties in Afghanistan last month. The UN says more than 1,500 were killed and injured in July, the highest total for any single month since May 2017. President Trump is downplaying North Korea's latest missile tests, tweeting they are not a violation of last year's Singapore agreement with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. U.S. officials claim that Kim personally promised Mr. Trump he would not conduct longer-range missile or nuclear tests. Mr. Trump on Friday tweeted, quote, "Chairman Kim does not want to disappoint me with a violation of trust. There is far too much for North Korea to gain, and there is far too much to lose." More news at voanews.com. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
And they are considering that the blood which has been shed and the martyrs is not going to go in vain, and the country will be put on the right path for democracy and sustainable development.
The Sudanese Opposition Coalition and the Transitional Military Council set to endorse a draft chapter on the peace process Saturday.
The Electoral Commission should be independent, and the way we put in place the Electoral Commission should not be appointment by a candidate. It should be in a different manner. Also, the recruitment of the staff in the Electoral Commission should be transparent.
Ugandan opposition groups say constitutional amendment proposals by the government will limit the political space for opponents of President Yoweri Museveni.
As an opposition political party, the People's Democratic Party has consistently advised Mr. President to review his party and reduce his security architecture. And nothing, absolutely nothing, has been done in that direction.
And the Nigerian main opposition party demands an independent inquiry into reports soldiers are being buried in unmarked graves. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. A leading member of the Sudanese Opposition Coalition of the Forces for Freedom and Change, or FFC, says an agreement with the Transitional Military Council will soon be initialed. Babikir Faisal, who was one of the group's lead negotiators, says both the FFC and the Transitional Military Council will meet Saturday to approve the draft chapter on the peace process. This, he says, includes issues relating to the recent accord signed in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa between the FFC and armed groups. His remarks came after the Military Council and FFC announced they have reached an agreement on Friday. To learn more about the agreement, I reached Babakir Faisal in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
Yesterday we reached an agreement on the constitutional document. And as you know, 2 weeks ago we initialed the political agreement. So now we have reached a full agreement on the transitional period and the constitutional government that is going to govern the transitional period. It includes all the structures and the institutions of the transitional government and the powers of each structure and institution, including the Sovereign Council, the Council of Ministers, and the legislative body.
So when will this entire agreement be fully signed?
They said maybe on August 7th.
You said maybe August 7th?
Yes. Today, actually, we are going to determine the exact date.
Once it is signed, when does it effectively begin?
Immediately after it's signed, it will be the effective document for the transitional period, and the TMC will be dissolved, and the Sovereign Council formed maybe the next day. And then the FFC will name the Prime Minister, and he's going to form his cabinet within maybe 2 weeks or so.
So since this was announced, there was jubilation across Sudan. What are your expectations as a prominent member of the FFC and a leading member in the negotiations?
Yes, there was jubilation. And as you know, the revolution has continued since December 19th until today. And we inherited a very corrupt government and regimes that dominated the Sudan for 3 decades. And now everybody is aspiring at moving to a different level, to a different stage, where we can just lay the ground and the foundation for our sustainable democracy. So we are full of hope. However, we understand that there are big challenges on the issues of the economy, peace and freedom, and hopefully we are going to tackle them one by one.
What role will the army play in this transitional phase?
Actually, this is a full transition to a civilian government, and the army is carry out its formal task in defending the territory of the country, and then the institutions of and the structures of the transitional period will carry the executive powers, particularly the Council of Ministers, because we have adopted a parliamentary way of governance. So the government, the army will just carry out its duties.
So tell me about the Constitutional Drafting Commission that will be established, and who will be members of this commission?
Actually, it's an independent commission. And it will be formed during the transitional period. There is no exact date. However, it's going to set the ground for the constitutional conference that will draft the constitution. However, the constitution will not be endorsed during the transitional period, but during the coming democratic regime following the elections. After 3 years.
Does this agreement meet all the demands of the FFC?
Actually, it has met the core demands of the revolution, which raised the slogan of the civility of the government and the democracy, peace and justice and equality for every Sudanese people. In the various Sudanese regions and regardless of their colors and ethnicities. So it's going to establish a civilian government and civilian state and move the country from 3 decades of tyranny and totalitarianism.
What is the message to the people of Sudan following this agreement?
People are feeling good, and they are considering that the blood which has been shed and the martyrs, it's not going to go in vain, and the country would be put on the right path for democracy and sustainable development.
Barbecue Faisal is a prominent member of the Sudanese Opposition Coalition of the Forces for Freedom and Change, or FFC. He spoke with me from Khartoum. Ugandan opposition groups say a new constitutional amendment proposed by the government will limit the political space for them and other opponents of President Yoweri Museveni. Local media say the government proposed the measures in an attempt to regulate opposition political party activities ahead of the 2021 general election. Among the proposed measures, political parties will be required to help the police to arrest members who violate electoral laws. However, the opposition parties are also proposing measures which they said could help strengthening the country's democracy. For reaction to the government constitutional amendment proposals, I reach Betty Aol Ochan, leader of the opposition members of parliament.
What they brought on the floor of parliament was not comprehensive. It was just to serve their interests only, but not to address the concern of the people at all. There were a lot of things that were raised in the Citizens' Compact when civil society organizations moved all over the country and collected the views of the people. These views of the people were not taken up in the deal table by government. And also, after every election, there are normally court petitions. And so this petition, for example, that one of Amama Mbabazi, 2016, the advice of Supreme Court was government of Uganda should go consult and amend the constitution to help the citizens better.
Specifically, what are some of the suggestions that the opposition wants to put across that will help bolster the democracy in Uganda?
In the first place, we want the view of people which came up in the Citizen Compact about the Electoral Commission, that the Electoral Commission should be independent. And the way we put in place the Electoral Commission should not be appointment by a candidate. It should be in a different manner. Also, the recruitment of the staff in the Electoral Commission should be transparent. They should stop the work of
Is it soldiers, even police blocking the opposition? That should be what the participation of the army in politics is. But look at also the president going around giving donations during the time of campaign.
One of the measures the NRM or the government is putting across is for political parties to ensure that they work effectively with officials at the polling stations to ensure that the elections are held in peace, transparent, and in a credible manner. Why do you disagree with such a measure?
You see, it has to start even from up. We have to make the ground really fair for all. The playground should not be harder for some other people that you also want to give up. Actually, this has also been observed by these people who come to observe election. That, you know, there is unfairness. Even if down there they allow us to do everything, but you do not know how results go to the center where they do the tally and later on make announcements. It has always been very unfair for more, especially the presidential.
One of the bills before the Legal Affairs Committee of Parliament, which is suggesting that political parties must work with the police to arrest members of the parties who break the law. Isn't this part of the responsibility of every Ugandan to make sure those who break the law are apprehended and dealt with according to the Ugandan law?
Well, we still have to debate and see that implemented, because even right now as we speak, while one party is free to do anything, to consult, to make a civic education, to go in for sole candidature, other parties, they are not allowed to go and have big meetings. But you find the president and his ministers moving on public resources in the name of Operation Wealth Creation. And yet you see it glaringly clear that that is already, you know, trying to let people just endorse him as a sole candidate. And he has moved all over the country on public money. This must change through the constitutional amendment. Even the term limit has to be reinstated.
Betty Aolo-Chan is the minority leader in the Ugandan parliament. She spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. Meanwhile, a Ugandan court on Friday sentenced a prominent academic to 18 months in prison for cyber harassment. Dr. Stella Nyanzi, a critic of President Yoweri Museveni, was found guilty of cyber harassment. Opponents say the president is increasingly becoming intolerant of dissent as resistance to his rule grows. Right activists on Friday also accused the government of using electronic communications laws to stifle dissent. Isaac Samakadi was, until recently, Dr. Nyanzi's lawyer. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached him soon after Dr. Nyanzi's sentencing and asked him what he made of the conviction.
They have no foundation in law. They are unfortunate, and they depict the sorry and sad state of affairs in the Uganda judiciary and the lack of hygiene in Uganda politics. The conviction is based on a trial that we challenged and we shall continue to challenge for falling short of the acceptable standards of a fair hearing. The sentence is harsh and excessive. According to the International Covenant for Civil and Political Rights, any offense which arises out of an alleged breach of freedom of expression, it must have relatively short sentences to reflect the importance accorded freedom of expression. So a sentence of 18 months for merely an obscene post on Facebook is unjustifiable. It reflects at once a failure to appreciate the law and the essence of democratic power entrusted to a judge.
Are you going to appeal the sentence?
I cannot speak with certainty at this occasion because Dr. Stella Nyanzi terminated my mandate on the 16th of July for this specific case, in her view, continuing to retain attorneys when the court was violating the right to a fair hearing was an absurdity. So she relieved us of that mandate on the 16th of July, and she's conducted an unrepresented litigant or defendant until today. We will meet her at the earliest opportunity and advise that there are strong and substantial grounds of appeal. She has her own autonomy and she will decide the right decision. We hope that she will accept to file an appeal.
She's already been on remand for 9 months. Yeah. Would the appeal, given the how the judicial system works in the country, not run out the clock?
Dr. Sanyang is ready and prepared for this court decision. I continue to be inspired by her bold defiance and appreciation of the values that the public will benefit from whatever outcome of the legal process that is set in motion. She continues to support whatever legal action she launches, but she assures us that the behavior of delinquent judges and magistrates must not discourage us at any point. History will be the ultimate judge.
This offense she was convicted of carries a fine option. Why did the magistrate decide to send her to jail instead of having to pay a fine?
It's a clear excess of judicial authority. The magistrate was certainly outside the proper bounds of acceptable judicial conduct in ignoring that. But from what I have heard on live Facebook posts which recast the proceedings, the magistrate stressed the fact that the obscene and indecent post touched the highest person in this country, the sitting president of Uganda, President Yoweri Museveni. So for her, the mention of Yoweri Kaguta Museveni in the post is an issue that makes a fine not an option during sentencing. It's absurd in law because the very fact that a political officer at the apex of the political establishment was the subject of freedom of expression means that the sentence must be minor and lenient, because a political officer must bear a thick skin. A political officer must be the target of the most robust and uninhibited speech of a critical nature. So clearly, the magistracy in Uganda does not operate according to the rule of law. They operate according to rule by law. They use the law as an engine of injustice to achieve externally processed and distilled political objectives. The objective here is to deny Dr. Stella Nyanzi the opportunity to be a political player in the final struggle to defeat Museveni's regime and expose it and destroy his legacy and make him as bad as Amini, if not worse. Dr. Stella Nyanzi right now is the most eloquent speaker to the ideological bankruptcy, the political bankruptcy, the moral bankruptcy of the regime. And she speaks with the tools that are accessible to the most politically active Ugandans alive. So she's a threat to the regime.
Isaac Samakadi was a former lawyer to Ugandan academic and activist Dr. Stella Nyanzi. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Nigerians' main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP, is calling on the National Assembly to launch an independent investigation into reports of secret military burials. A Wall Street Journal report said the military has been secretly burying soldiers killed in the fight against Boko Haram in unmarked graves. The military sharply rejected the report, saying the newspaper is ignorant of military burial procedures. For more about the demand for an independent inquiry, I reach Kola Ologbodinyan, spokesperson for the People's Democratic Party, or PDP.
Our position in the People's Democratic Party will be for the National Assembly to set up an ad hoc committee that will conduct a forensic investigation into the allegation of secret burial ground in respect of our men and women who are on the harm's way. For us, as a party, we believe that the allegation is so weighty such that the response of the military might not just be enough. So we think that an independent platform like the National Assembly should be able to weigh in and conduct an investigation into the matter. And most of this is important in view of the state of insecurity in which our nation has found itself.
Boko Haram has been technically defeated, so insecurity has been reported. It's not as bad as people are making it to be, and that the PDP is just scoring cheap political points.
That would be totally incorrect. Given the situation of the state of insecurity in our country today, it is absolutely wrong for anybody, whether it's a supporter of Mr. President or not, to assume or to declare or state that the situation is better than it was before. It's totally wrong. We have a situation where banditry, kidnapping, the Boko Haram,
has taken over, and it's no longer a situation where you can claim that it is reduced to a particular area. We have a situation today where bandits go as far from the north to the southwest. So the situation is precarious for us as a people, and we believe that the government needs to act, and act faster than it used to do.
Officials of the administration are saying that the government is acting, and that is why the president recently met with all security chiefs to come up with additional strategies to combat this. You think this is not enough?
The People's Democratic Party has vehemently and consistently advised President Muhammadu Buhari to review his parade and rejig his security architecture. The president has not considered this advice in any form. And as a result of that, the insecurity situation of our nation is persisting and is going at an alarming rate as we speak. There is palpable fear on the faces of Nigerians. When you see them on the streets, people are scared, people are worried, people are becoming despondent.
So what is the best line of action to resolve some of these insecurity concerns? The government obviously is saying that it is confident in the security agencies to combat terrorism, militant groups, among other insecurity issues, and that they are working feverishly to address it, and that critics are just saying it for the sake of it.
In 2015, the security situation of our nation was essentially about Boko Haram. Fast forward to 2015 and 2019, and as we speak, all other vices, like banditry, like kidnapping, has come up, and it has spread across the nation, so much that even in Abuja, the nation's capital, people have been killed on the streets. As an opposition political party, the People's Democratic Party has consistently advised Mr. President to review his parade and rethink his security architecture. And nothing, absolutely nothing, has been done in that direction. You cannot put generals on the war front and they are losing men, and you do not find the need to review your parade. You don't need a military education or strategy to know what to do. And more so, Nigerians in 2015 said one of the reasons they said they rejected our party was because they found a retired general who was going to come on board to be able to man the insecurity situation. But here we are today. We are worse off as a people. And that's the absolute truth.
What is the stance of the PDP when some Nigerians are calling for the firing of all security chiefs because, according to them, they have failed to carry out the president's instructions to protect life and property of Nigerians?
That is the position of the People's Democratic Party, that means the president should review his parade and that he should rejig his security architecture in view of the fact that what he has now is failing, if it has not totally failed.
Kola Ologbodiyan is the spokesperson for the Nigerian main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. The UN Refugee Agency welcomes the closure of three detention centers in Libya, but voices concern about the whereabouts and fate of the refugees, asylum seekers, and migrants who were held in the facilities. For the VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency has been advocating for the release of refugees, asylum seekers, and migrants from Libya's detention centers for a long time. And so it says it is pleased that three of the country's largest facilities, Misrata, Tajura, and Qoms, have been shut. However, UNHCR spokesman Andre Mihecic tells VOA he has no idea what has happened to the inmates.
To our knowledge, there are 19 official detention centers run by the authorities that are currently active in Libya, with nearly 5,000 refugees and migrants that are arbitrarily detained there.
Mihecic says UNHCR is closely following developments. He says refugees should not be put in detention. In Libya, he says people held in facilities near battle zones are at particular risk, as was seen in the tragic events that unfolded in Tajura last month. The Tajura detention center on the outskirts of the capital, Tripoli, was hit by an airstrike on July 2nd. More than 50 people, including children, were killed and 130 injured. The vast majority were sub-Saharan Africans trying to reach Europe. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, says the attack could amount to a war crime. Mihecic says children should never be locked up, and in all cases, detention should only be a measure of last resort.
What we are calling on now is for an orderly release of all refugees in detention centers to urban settings, and we stand ready to provide these people with assistance through our urban programs that would include some form of financial assistance, medical and psychosocial support.
The United Nations describes Libyan detention centers as appalling, overcrowded places. It says detainees are denied sufficient food and medical care and are subject to abusive treatment, including torture and rape. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the head of the Sierra Leonean Anti-Corruption Commission has warned public officials to desist from engaging in graft. Francis Ben Kaifala says his organization has strong backing from President Julius Maada Bio to weed out corruption in the West African country. His remarks came after the anti-graft agency seized properties of former government officials. But members of the previous government say the ongoing fight against corruption is a mere cover to harass and persecute them, accusations the government denies. To learn more about the anti-corruption fight, I reach Francis Ben Kaifala, Commissioner for the Sierra Leonean Anti-Corruption Commission.
We have been employing various tools to fight corruption in Sierra Leone. One tool is to go to court and get conviction. Another tool is what we call a non-conviction-based asset recovery or asset forfeiture, whereby we confiscate properties that have been corruptly acquired. And one of the properties that came in our possession a few months ago was the Riba Hotel, which we believe belonged to a public officer. But once he was arrested, he denied ownership of the hotel, and we did our investigations, and it has been our possession since. So we decided to hand it over to the Attorney General and Minister of Justice under the principle of bona vacantia. That is a property that does not belong to anyone. It goes to the state.
So effectively, the Riba Hotel will now belong to the Sierra Leonean state.
Yes, it will vest in the Sierra Leonean state, and the Attorney General has been requested to take possession of it immediately so that the President and the Cabinet can decide what to do with it. They could use it for a vocational technical institution, they could use it for a hospital for children, they could use it for many other purposes that will benefit the people of Kono in the eastern part of Sierra Leone.
We also understand that your organization has seized the house of former Minister of Works, Alhaji Kemo Sisi. Under what conditions was this seized?
Yes, we confiscated several properties. It's between 15 and 20 properties that belong to former government officials. The aim of those confiscations, first of all, is to verify ownership and then to be able to determine whether the resources that they've had over the years were commensurate to the worth of those properties under our unexplained wealth law. So basically, we are trying to probe into ownership of property by public officials so that those that are unexplained wealth, we can charge them to court. Those who can confiscate, we can confiscate them. And those who can release, we can release them. It's a kind of processing of ownership of property by public officials in the lifestyle audit that the Anti-Corruption Commission is now doing.
I'm sure you've understood some criticism coming your way, especially from the opposition, saying that this is a clear case of the government using state institutions like the ACC to legally persecute them and to tarnish their reputation.
Well, people have the right to their opinion. I have always maintained that I came to this commission to do good and to serve the interests of the people of Sierra Leone and to do so fairly and justly, but also fiercely. So what we are doing could be said to be that, but we know that, firstly, those we are targeting were public officials. Secondly, that there are genuine issues to answer. Don't forget, all these properties are coming on the backdrop of the fact that we have been able to also recover physical cash of nearly $2 million within a year. And these public officials came themselves and paid some of them. Some of them are still under investigation. So what we are doing is evidence-based. What we are doing is based on potent evidence, not just based on what we feel or what we think. It is unfortunate that I became commissioner just at the backdrop of a change of government. And of course, I have to look into the past, but the present is completely in sight. And what is happening now should send a clear message to all public officers, particularly presently, that Sierra Leone has decided to turn a new page. And that time when impunity was what used to prevail, when everything was a settlement, when people thought they could do and get away with it, when people could take the citizens for granted, when people could take the individual interest above the collective interest, that time is gone. And we are turning a new page and to ensure that there's an era of complete servant leadership and the people who are in positions of trust ensure that their lifestyles are commensurate to what they have and not to be living in a way that is above their emoluments, their salaries, and their income. I believe was the main reason why people were holding public office. We have to break away from that if this country has to develop, and this is what we are now working towards.
What is the current state of the fight against corruption in Sierra Leone?
Sierra Leone recently galloped from somewhere in the 30s to become third in the country for government efforts in the fight against corruption. That is the Afrobarometer report. We are 71% currently in the MCC Control of Corruption Index. Every index is showing that Sierra Leone is making serious inroads in the fight against corruption. The citizens are putting in efforts. There is enormous political will everywhere. There is serious presidential will coming from the president, and we at the Anti-Corruption Commission are putting in the courage and effort that is needed for results to happen, and the results are everywhere. I mean, the indices across the globe, which are really what checks what we are doing, whether it's producing results, are happening. Citizens' confidence in the fight against corruption used to be as low as about 19%. It has shot up to almost 79% in recent times. So these are the things that show you that the effort is gaining results, and I and my team at the Anti-Corruption Commission are doing what we can to change the story of this country, relying, of course, on the support we are getting from a dedicated president and the citizens of Sierra Leone.
Francis Ben Kaifala is the commissioner for the Sierra Leonean Anti-Corruption Commission. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown. In Malawi, the Public Affairs Committee, a religious group, met with President Arthur Peter Mutharika on Friday. The meeting forms part of its effort to resolve rising political tensions. The group also plans to meet opposition parties and leaders of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition. It has been organizing a series of nationwide protests demanding the resignation of Dr. Justice Jane Ansah, chairperson for the Electoral Commission. The demands come following the disputed May 21 general election, which Malawians say is the cause of the rising political tension. To learn more about the effort to ease the political tension, I reach Robert Feary, Executive Director for the Public Affairs Committee.
I can confirm that we engaged the head of state on a dialogue process following some of the political developments we have had. So the meeting went on well. It was fruitful, very constructive meeting, and we have secured commitment, and I can say the head of state is committed to the dialogue process and mediation process basically at the moment. And secondly, is that we have agreed that we have to engage further the rest of the stakeholders, especially the leadership for United Transformation Movement, Dr. Saros Chilima, then to engage the president of the Malay Congress Party, Dr. Chakwera, and then the Human Rights Defenders, who have been behind organizing demonstrations. So I can say the meeting was fruitful and constructive.
What is the end game after these meetings with the head of state, Lazarus Chakwera of the MCP, as well as UTM leader, former Vice President Dr. Saros Chilima? What is the end game here? What is the anticipated objective?
Well, you have to take note that another resolution which was entered into today was to go back to the head of state and discuss in terms of how the consultation will go between ourselves and the Chakwera and the Saros. So basically at that point in time, then we'll be able to define in terms of what should take place. Meanwhile, I think we are so much in the midst of the discussion, and it's very difficult to predict certain things. But obviously, in the dialogue process, what you are looking for is a peaceful settlement of any dispute, and that's what our goal is all about.
Robert, some people are suggesting that the election dispute is in the court, so the Public Affairs Committee meeting with some of these leaders might not be able to resolve this until a decision by the court. How do you respond to that?
Well, in a dialogue, you listen, And we started listening to from, you know, the leadership of UTM, and we listened to the leadership of Malawi Congress Party, and we have listened to the leadership of the DPP. Now, having done this, definitely a solution comes from the parties who are involved. I don't think, as Public Affairs Committee, as far as dialogue is concerned, we dictate the outcome of the dialogue process. You let the dialogue process define. And it suggests that there are impossibilities. We remain very optimistic that at the end of the day, peaceful settlements can always be secured where there is dialogue. Dialogue is a very good weapon to deal with disputes or different challenges that countries are facing.
I've heard some reports about political commentators welcoming the development, but what feedback have you heard so far following the overtures you have made, including meeting with the president and his team, as well as the anticipated opposition leaders you seek to meet?
At the moment, I think I'm spending more, I think, engaging with the media in terms of the summarized agreement which I've just shared with you. So not much on the social media, and, very difficult to actually predict or comment on certain things, how people are viewing it.
But what do you see as the prospect of success of this meeting that you're having?
Well, at this juncture, it will be very early for me to say that. I think I'm just confining myself to the process in terms of how we have agreed to go ahead.
Robert Feary is the executive director for the Malawian Public Affairs Committee. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. You are hearing from Ray Vanny featuring Diamond Tetema, then Fuse ODG featuring Sean Paul with Dangerous Follow, Nadia Mukami with African Lover, Olamide with Motigba, and then Aloysius with Posa Ya Bolingo.
Ay, mama, shigidi, nakufa, hoy, wikidi, ay, mama, shigidi, konki, fire, moto, liquidi.
Ayo tuende tetema, oh mama tetema,
tipo tipo tetema,
oh mama tetema.
Ayo tuende tetema,
oh mama tetema,
shuka chini tetema,
oh mama tetema.
Ayo tuende tetema,
oh mama tetema,
tipo tipo tetema,
oh mama tetema.
Ayo tuende tetema,
oh mama tetema,
shuka chini tetema,
oh mama tetema.
Yani kama vile generator
tetema,
kama mwizi kakupiga ngeta
tetema,
mwendo wa kutunga kupepeta
tetema,
chini nikipuliza tarumbeta
asaboza toza keza shogoroza
kufa chali kama mende
Maria Rose
poza
tungiline goza
twende nikupige nyembe
okay.
You make my mind go kolo 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 ukinuna tunie toro
goro.
Sani pesa digi digi
wash
biuno ya digi digi
wash
funga kibindo mkwiji kwiji
wash
ni kunyonge kazigi zigi
tete
oh mama tetema
tipo tipo tetema
oh mama tetema
aya tunde tetema
oh mama tetema
shuka chini tetema
oh mama tetema
aya tunde tetema
oh mama tetema
tipo tipo tetema
oh mama tetema
aya tunde tetema
oh mama tetema
shuka chini tetema
oh mama tetema.
Fuse ODG and SPZ, what we tell them? Blaze them!
Look at you in that dress. Girl, you dangerous like a gun. Give them you nothing less. Girl, you murder everyone. Your love is a killer. Your love is a killer. Hey, look at you in that dress. Girl, you dangerous like a gun. Give them you nothing less. Girl, you murder everyone. Your love is a killer. Your love is a killer. Yeah, look at you.
Somebody call the popo,
popo.
There's no way that you're looking at so cold. If you ain't ready, then you need to go home. And beware, just see her running on a solo. She got me begging hold up. And she all up on me like a logo. But I'm not complaining. My baby, let's go, go, go. She killin' when I dance, she murder with the waist. Everybody watch her when she turn up in her place. You ain't got a chance if you really tryna race. She already had a finish line with her pace. I showed her went down, then she went low. Gave it to her battle like she in a relay. The craziest thing is she don't know how beautiful she is every day. Look at you.
Hit the floor and make them and them go blind. Girl, each and every time I'm loving your design. Just give me that take to the talk, put your back on the rock. Girl, give me that thing non-stop. Give me the bracelet and look back when me a tap that girl, cause you're too hot. The locomotion, me love the motion. Anytime when you up in this club, girl, you are done them just like gun. You got that dangerous love.
Look at you in that dress. Girl, you dangerous like a gun. Man, give man, them you nothing less. Girl, you murder everyone. Your love is a killer. Like a gun, give them you nothing less. Girl, you murder everyone. Your love is a killer. Your love is a killer.
Achana na wale wagombi wanu serious. Niambia, nichangia, kama ninyi mbona kuimbia. There's a little loma kazi ya bolingo. Isi waskandoski wilipoze, roi na kumanjo ni kupoze. Tupendane ujanani pia uzeni. Tuvume Kajuk na Vanessa, kwenye media together tunatesa. 254 sino kusema we. Let me love you the African way. Let me love you like an African lady. Nikuite papa, nanita mama. Nikuite papa, nanita mama. The African way. Nikuite papa, nanita mama. Nikuite papa, nanita mama. The African way.
I don't want to suffocate. With the bad doing the jellyfish.
Yabolingo with Alicia Sposa. That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, the ever-friendly John Dryden. We say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, speak softly and carry a big stick. You will go far. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. The United States and Russia are